Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. During the 2013 legislative session, progressives at the State House were pushing for an income tax reform bill that would raise tax burdens on wealthy people. They wanted to use the new revenue to fund some budget initiatives and to help lower tax bills for almost 250,000 Vermonters. Governor Peter Shumlin opposed the plan. He argued that lawmakers took steps to make the tax code more fair years ago. And he said there's no need to change it again.
You can't do it twice. We're already doing it. We have the fairest tax code in the country. So this notion that some of my progressive friends have, and I'm the most progressive governor in America, that I am refusing to fix something that should be fixed is what puzzles me. We fixed it. Our wealthiest Vermonters pay the most. To suggest that it's going to be in my top 10 list, you know, that's not, really, it isn't.
This disagreement over tax policy is one of several key issues where the governor and the progressives seem to have very different priorities. So what are some of the top priorities of the Vermont Progressive Party? That's the focus today on Vermont Edition. Our guests, Martha Abbott, who is the chair of the Progressive Party, and Burlington Representative Chris Pearson, who serves as the head of the Progressive Caucus in the Vermont House. Great to have you here.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having us.
Great to be here, Bob. Thanks.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can always post your comments at Vermont Edition's page at vpr.net. You can go to Vermont Edition's Facebook page. You can tweet us at Vermont Edition. And email works fine, too, vermontedition@vpr.net. Some of your thoughts. Was it a good thing that the governor insisted that the state budget be balanced without raising any broad-based taxes? Or did some programs get shortchanged in that? What about changing Vermont's income tax system to raise new revenue from wealthy people to help lower tax bills for many low- and middle-income people? Or would that raising rates hurt Vermont's economic recovery? And the big question, should the progressives consider running their own candidate for governor in 2014? What are the pros and the cons of that decision? What are your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Give us a call or post your comments at Vermont Edition's page at vpr.net. This goes under the category that you learn something new every day. Martha Abbott, just before we went on the air, you talked about being the first woman to run for governor in the state of Vermont. That's an interesting fact that I don't think a lot of people know.
Well, it was a long time ago, Bob. It was 1974, so it's sort of ancient history.
But you've been very involved in Vermont's political system for some time. And back in 2010, the Progressive Party decided not to run a candidate for governor. Instead, you backed Democratic candidate Peter Shumlin. Turned out to be a very close election. Shumlin won by roughly 4,000 votes, so one could certainly make the argument that support from progressives helped elect Shumlin. As I remember at the time, you had a couple of core issues, single-payer health care, closing down a Vermont Yankee, and the passage of the same-sex marriage law. During Shumlin's first term, there was a lot of progress on those three issues. But during the recent legislative session, it seems like the governor and the progressives are going in different directions, primarily on tax and budget issues. What happened?
Well, let's back up a step. Actually, what happened in 2010 is the year before that, before the second year of the legislature, before the election, we said, if the Democrats will put up for governor a candidate who will fight during the legislative session to close Vermont Yankee and create a single-payer health care plan, then we will very seriously consider not opposing that person. It wasn't so much that we supported Shumlin, but we decided we would not be a factor in that race. And he did, in fact, in that last, he was president pro temp, and he did fight real hard for those two issues. And yes, we were happy about that, and it probably did make the difference in that election. Now, things have changed, as you say, and many progressives and many Democrats are very upset about what happened in the last legislative session. We can talk about raising taxes on the wealthy, but Shumlin's approach was to raise taxes on poor people to try and fund a program for poor people or low-income working Vermonters.
And you're thinking now of his taking $17 million, his plan to take $17 million from the Earned Income Tax Credit Program?
That's right, Bob. I'm a tax preparer, as you might remember in my other hat. And I every day see people who benefit, are able to survive, are able to keep on working and supporting their families just barely because of the Earned Income Tax Credit. And yes, it is a good thing that Vermont has a piggyback tax, Earned Income Tax Credit, but that really is what keeps some people alive. I remember being shocked when I heard that budget proposal, and the same day on the radio, Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott, the leading Republican in the state, had a very astute comment, I thought, when he said, "I don't think we can do that. People use this money to buy groceries." So my feeling is if a Republican had proposed some of this stuff that Shumlin proposed during the last budget go-around, there would have been an outcry from one end of the state to the other. So, you know, that, I think, is very disturbing to a lot of folks.
The governor would say, I think, that he's always been a fiscal conservative. The issues that you mentioned before, closing Vermont Yankee, single-payer health care system, and the same-sex marriage law, he would say he's very strongly supporting those issues, but that he's always been a fiscal conservative, so it shouldn't have been a great surprise that he did what he proposed, the Earned Income Tax Credit change, as well as not wanting to increase any broad-based taxes. So were you surprised by his priorities during the session?
I would argue that we are fiscal conservatives and that what our proposal was wasn't so much about raising taxes on anybody. It was about making the tax structure more fair. Yes, in theory, we have a progressive Vermont income tax, but there are three tiers only. It's not very progressive, and it could be vastly improved. And certainly our property tax system is good, but it is so complicated that many, many people can't understand it and can't figure it out. So I think there are plenty of things we could fiscally conservatively do that the governor seems to be unwilling to look at.
Today on the program, we are talking to two leaders of the Progressive Party. Our phone number here at Vermont Edition, 1-800-639-2211. What are your thoughts about this issue, raising taxes, balancing the budget without raising broad-based taxes? Maybe the Progressives should run a candidate for governor in 2014. What do you think of that? 1-800-639-2211. So, Chris, when you hear the governor say, we've already made the tax code more fair, we're not going to go back and do it again, end of issue. Does that set up some conflict for the 2014 session, not only with progressives, but perhaps with some Democrats?
Yeah, I think a lot of Democrats joined us in this feeling of outrage about his proposal, particularly around earned income tax credit, which is a tax increase on the 40,000 lowest income working Vermonters. To get the earned income tax credit, you have to be working. So let's just be clear about that. You know, the governor is very eager to have a reputation as of not wanting to raise taxes, but he proposed and raised the gas tax, for instance. He proposed to raise taxes on low income working Vermonters. So he kind of tries to have it both ways. When he talks about the income tax, he talks about our income tax being the most progressive, and there's truth in that. But he neglects to examine the bigger picture of the tax burden. And our tax burden in the state is not, by the way, the highest in the country, nowhere near. It's about midway of the 50 states. But it is more or less a flat tax burden. If anything, it hits middle-class Vermonters the hardest. And that's what we're trying to address. With the tax proposal, in different variations, it passed the House, it passed the Senate. I was very proud of our votes on that. And the themes were there. It was make it more progressive. So ask those who've been booming in the last decade to pay a little bit more so that middle class and low income Vermonters can have a little tax relief. For some reason, when the governor looked at this proposal, I think the final proposal was to raise taxes on the wealthiest 15,000 Vermonters and cut taxes for the lowest 220,000 Vermonters. He looked at that and said, no new taxes. A lot of us looked at him and said, Governor, we just don't understand. This is good for Vermonters. Last time we checked, you're running for office, and 220,000 people you're giving a tax break for would be good politics in addition to good policy. What are we missing? No new taxes. You know, that was kind of the answer. Very frustrating, very troubling, and something as progressives have fought for many years. So.
But he would say, and others who support him would say, it's those high-end people who contribute a lot of revenue to the state of Vermont. And if you start raising taxes on these people, they're going to leave.
Sure.
And if 100 or 200 of these people leave, we got a big problem.
Sure. Except that the data doesn't back that up in any way. In fact, this exact question has been studied over and over, and it's in fact the opposite. You see, if you look at people coming and going from Vermont, more people coming to the state to reside in our state happen to be upper-income people. They like a good quality of life. They like the wonderful environment and neighborhoods of our state. And so I think that's overblown, and I think it's a scapegoat. And frankly, it allows him to say, I support taxing the wealthy in Washington, but we can't do it here in the state. I think it's a cop-out. He said also, we've done this once. We're not going to do it again. I don't know about you, Bob, but I painted my house a few years ago. I'm going to have to do it again. There are things that need ongoing care, and I think we tax structure is one of them.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Peggy in Norwich. Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. What I would like to bring to the discussion today is how a change that was made in the property tax support system that we have in this state. About 6 years ago, there was a really big increase in our taxes, our property taxes, because they took away the rebate. So what happens is that the support that we get for our property taxes is based on last year's taxes. Any increase in the taxes doesn't get considered. So if you're supposed to be in the category that only pays like 4.5% of your income, you can end up paying 6 or 7% of your income. And I think this needs to be addressed.
Hi, Peggy. Thanks for that question. I think that what you mean is that it's based on the previous year's income. So the amount that you get off your property tax bill is based on your previous year's income. That's why when you fill out your income taxes, you apply for property tax reduction for the coming year. And it is a very cumbersome and complicated system, and I support you for criticizing that. One of the things that was difficult for many people was that it used to be you got mailed a check in the current year. And many people had that check budgeted for their college tuition or for their property tax payment or for some other large bill that they had during the year. And all of a sudden, the state decided, well, we don't trust you with this check. We're going to send it directly to the town. And so now it comes off your property tax bill. And it's A, harder to notice, and B, you don't have control over how to fiscally manage that part of your budget. So I would love to go back to the system that we had before and to simplify the system that we do have. I hope that helps.
And Martha, do you think we should have a system where everybody pays their property taxes based on their income? I mean, now we have sort of a two-part system depending on your income. If your income is less than, roughly about $90,000, you can pay your school taxes based on your income and not the property of your the value of your property?
Right. The problem is not everybody understands that. Many people don't have to file an income tax form because they're elderly or for whatever reason. These are complicated forms. Unless they have a tax preparer or some sort of advocate, they may miss out on the program altogether. We've certainly heard many stories of people whose houses are being sold at auction because they were not able to figure out how to apply for property tax reduction. So yes, I think it would be much simpler to just go to an income tax system, streamline it, get all this complication out of it, and still be able to fund equally the education in all of our different towns.
Today in the program, we're talking to two leaders of the Progressive Party. We're looking at their priorities for the coming year and the consideration of perhaps running a candidate for governor in 2014. What are your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. We'd like to hear from you and get your thoughts on this subject. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me now, two leaders of the Vermont Progressive Party, Martha Abbott, who's the chair of the party, and Burlington Representative Chris Pearson, who serves as the head of the Progressive Caucus in the Vermont House. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Chris, I know for the last couple of election cycles, you've been working very hard to build up strength in the Vermont State House at the legislative level for the Progressive Party, House members, Senate members, getting folks elected really from different parts of the state of Vermont, not just Chittenden County. So as you look at the idea of maybe running a candidate for governor in 2014, do those two ideas, are they somewhat in conflict?
I think that's part of the challenge. Let's put it that way. I mean, as listeners know, the Vermont Progressive Party is unique in the country. I mean, there is no other state that has an ongoing, sustained third-party presence. In Vermont's case, we've been electing people to the legislature since 1990, consistently, straight through. And in the last few years, we have picked up seats in the Senate. We've got a new member elected from Franklin County in the House, and we're very proud of that. And I think most people would agree we have maybe more influence than we deserve, given our small numbers. But we work very hard, and we're able to stake out grounds on issues that tends to shift the debate. And I think that's really important for the state. When, you know, we are still a very small party, so raising money and putting the grassroots effort together to run for governor is no small challenge. And part of our question as we talk this over in the coming months is can we afford to do that when we are going to continue to stay focused on winning legislative races? That is where we can win, where we do win, and where we have an impact. So that's got to be priority number one. How a governor's race fits into that remains to be seen.
And do you have some thoughts about that at this point, that whether or not it's a good idea, would running a candidate for governor take away from that legislative effort?
It might. And I think, you know, it's not up to me. It's not up to Martha. We have a democratic process. This fall, town committees, county committees, and ultimately state committee get reformed, as is the case for all statewide parties, major parties in Vermont. And through that process, this discussion will be happening, and we'll see. I mean, it's also not automatic that we will have good people that want to run for governor. I mean, you know, not everybody out there is thinking, geez, maybe I'll run for governor next year. So there's a number of challenges for us, probably more so than the other big parties, just because we are very dependent on grassroots activity and volunteers. And we are not a big money party. You know, we don't take corporate donations. We don't have big PACs bankrolling us. We don't have a national party that hires staff for us or sends us big checks in the fall of election year. So there are some challenges that are a bit more unique for us.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Richard, who's calling from Plymouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Richard. What's on your mind?
I live in Plymouth, Vermont, not Plymouth, New Hampshire.
Anyway, oh, well, that's good to know.
Okay. Just a question for Martha. She mentioned basing the real estate tax on income. How does that affect people who own homes here in Vermont but don't have income in Vermont? They have income in other states.
That's a really good question. I didn't explain the idea fully, but certainly we would think that would apply only to Vermont residents on the property taxes on their residence, which is really what the property tax program is about. If we were going to adopt a different system, I think second homeowners and people who are here part-time who own property and rental property, commercial property, that would all stay the way it is.
Martha, as chair of the party, I've had conversations with you about whether or not the Progressive Party should be a major party, because if you're a major party in Vermont, you really have to have a primary to elect your statewide candidates. And you ran for governor, I believe, recently in order to make sure that somebody who really was not affiliated with the Progressive Party and to make sure that they didn't win that nomination. Do you sometimes think it'd be better to go back and be a minor party, and then your statewide candidates would be chosen, I think, at a party caucus. Would that be a better way for the party to operate in the future?
Well, it might in some ways, Bob, but present company accepted. The press has written our obituary over and over, and if we were to drop back from being a major party to a minor party, I don't think it would enhance our effectiveness. So with all of that goes the fact that anybody can decide to enter our primary as they can decide to enter the Democratic or Republican primary. Very often the other parties have candidates that don't really have the backing and support of the party, but that is the system we have. That is democracy. It's sometimes messy, and we're open to thoughts on this from anybody who wants to get in touch with us at progressiveparty.org. So please, we'd love to hear from folks.
And if you'd like to join the conversation today, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about the Progressive Party, whether or not they should run a candidate for governor in 2014, or maybe concentrate on their legislative effort. What do you think? 1-800-639-2211. We do have an email from Michael who wrote us, run a candidate. I'd like to see a social, democratic, progressive candidate espousing true American values and ideas that actually benefit the working class and their best interests. So there are some people who definitely want you to run a candidate. Chris, at a recent state committee meeting, a number of progressives expressed some disappointment with the way that the governor is dealing with health care reform. Washington County Senator Anthony Polina put it this way. This is a quote. There was an awful lot of conversation this session about the federally mandated exchanges and almost none about Vermont's commitment to single payer. Many people in the state house seem to have forgotten what they voted for, that the exchange is not the goal, but just a step along the way. We can't just keep putting this discussion off. Eventually, we're going to have to talk about how we're going to finance our new healthcare system. And the only way that makes sense is with a fair, progressive tax, which likely includes a progressive payroll tax. That was Anthony Polina writing that. Since Vermont can't implement a single-payer health care system until 2017 at the earliest, and a lot of people think it's not going to happen that early, but that would be the very earliest, doesn't it make sense to concentrate on what's happening now, and that's the exchange, which opens up in October and actually starts taking some requests for insurance coverage, and then in January, that's the way that individuals and businesses with fewer than 50 employees are going to purchase their insurance. Doesn't it make sense to concentrate on the exchange first?
Yeah, we have to comply with federal law. You know, no matter what system we have, we can't ignore federal law. And so that's what we're doing in Vermont. But I will say I have some faith that the Shumlin administration is building the exchange with an eye to taking it further to single payer. So I liken it to a building. You know, if you take my analogy, the federal government is requiring us to build a one-story building. But as we do that, we're making sure that it can support second and third stories as we go to further to single payer. There's a lot of technical IT infrastructure that's coming into the place right now for the exchange, funded by the federal government, that we're making sure can be transitioned part of our foundation for single payer. So I think there are some good things happening. But what you see with some of the governor's proposals this year, not even necessarily about healthcare, although talk about the exchange and people coming from Catamount and going into the exchange. There's a lot of discussion about that. I was among people in the House Healthcare Committee. We fell one vote short of doing more for that population. So we have been spending money on people in Catamount today. As they transition into the exchange, many of these people will have roughly the same cost of premiums, but if they get sick, they will see potentially a much bigger jump in out-of-pocket expenses. A few of them will go to Medicaid, and they'll have a better system. But in the exchange, for many people currently on Catamount, they're going to potentially have a lot higher out-of-pocket exposure, going from about $1,000 to $5,000. That's very real money. And when people can't pay for health care, the whole system gets weaker. So when we couldn't convince the Shumlin administration to think about that, to continue, in fact, spending the money we're spending today on Catamount on this population, you know, the trust starts to erode. And I think that's part of what you're seeing. You're not seeing any overt action on single payer. And the signals and the noise around it, as we're talking about healthcare and we have to make these changes to the exchange, there's a trust problem, I think, by and large. And that's certainly where I'm coming from. I'm not willing to say he's not going to deliver it. He's very passionate about single-payer healthcare. I'm still hopeful, but there's a lot of work to be done. I believe that we have the capacity for the technical infrastructure, the bureaucracy. I'm worried about the governor's ability to take on the health industry. I mean, this is an enormous industry in our country. Is he going to be willing to take them on at the same time he's fighting a tax battle in Vermont? Both of those are very big challenges, and I'm nervous.
You know, there are a number of Vermonters, I think, who are looking at the single-payer system and wondering how it's going to work and wondering if it's really the road that they want to go down. They're truly undecided about this. And if something happens with the exchange and the exchange doesn't function properly, that could really erode their confidence and trust in a single-payer system. So doesn't it make sense to concentrate on the exchange and get this part of it right?
I think so. There's certainly logic there. And if you talk to the Commissioner Larson, the Commissioner of DEVA, that's definitely their strategy, and they're making sure the exchange is going to work. And I think that is important. But, you know, we just can't stop talking about the next step, going to single payer. You know, the people who are involved in getting the exchange up and running, we don't need them going around the state talking about single payer, but they're not the only people who can talk about healthcare. So, for instance, and in fact, Shumlin proposed it, and I supported it in the House. We couldn't get it traction in the Senate, was a commission, a group of legislators and business owners and regular Vermonters going around the state talking to people about this. I think that would be a positive step. We need to come to some consensus about how we're going to fund this. The funding today of healthcare is very complicated and very poorly understood. We've got to get to the bottom of that before we say, okay, we're going to stop paying premiums, we're going to shift to a tax funding, and you know, I think a lot of Vermonters understand the benefit of universal care. I think when you start talking about funding it through taxes, it gets nerve-wracking. And, you know, but nobody refutes the idea that we're spending way too much, that our healthcare costs have just ballooned, you know, doubling in the last 20 years. We're spending nearly $6 billion for our little state on healthcare. We've got to do better.
Let's turn to Beth in Rutland. Hi, Beth. Welcome to the program.
Hi, everybody. I just have a disclaimer. Martha did not pay me to make this phone call. I just want to say I would love to see Martha as governor. She has worked for the Progressive Party for many, many years. She never gives up, and she never gets apathetic, unlike some people like myself who get involved for a month and then, you know, are easily distracted. That's all I have to say. I think that's the true meaning of a politician.
All right, Beth, thanks very much for your phone call. If the progressives do decide to run a candidate in 2014, Martha, is that something you would consider?
I'm not really thinking about that right now. What I'm thinking about are the two issues. You know, progressives are all about issues, and right now we're working on challenging the other parties and candidates to turn down corporate donations. Don't wait for Citizens United. Let's all agree we're not going to take corporate money, and that the state should divest from fossil fuels, from investing in fossil fuels in their retirement funds and other things. Those are the two main issues we're working on right now, and that's really what I'm focused on. But thank you, Beth, for that vote of confidence.
So we're almost out of time, Martha, but let's talk about the campaign finance effort, which was not successful in the legislature this past year. How important an issue does this become in terms of the future of the Progressive Party?
I think it's huge. We're starting a petition campaign asking Vermont political donors to say, I'm not going to give to anybody who doesn't swear off corporate donations. And you saw in the Vermont Senate, 3 progressives, 7 Democrats, and 1 Republican voted to not have corporate contributions be allowed in our political process. 13 Democrats and 6 Republicans voted to keep the system the way it is. And there's no reason that we can't, as a small state, agree that we're all just going to do this.
Great to have both of you on the program today. Martha Abbott is the chair of the Progressive Party. Burlington Representative Chris Pearson is the party's caucus leader in the Vermont House. Many thanks for being on Vermont Edition today.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Bob.
Coming up next, I'll talk with VPR's John Dillon about some new developments in the governor's controversial land deal in East Montpelier. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Well, there were some new developments in a controversial land deal in East Montpelier involving Governor Peter Shumlin and Jerry Dodge. And here to fill us in on the details is VPR's John Dillon. Hey, John.
Hello, Bob.
So, John, one of the key issues in this case where the governor bought a house and 16 acres of land in East Montpelier is that the seller, Jerry Dodge, did not have a lawyer represent him in those proceedings last November. He said he couldn't afford one. The governor says he tried to convince Dodge to get one, but it didn't happen. Well, this week, Dodge got a lawyer. Tell us about him.
Well, the lawyer is Brady Tunzing, and he lives in Charlotte, but practices mainly in D.C. He's part of a firm down there that has done some work for Republican people. And he's also connected to sort of state Republican issues. He was involved representing then-Lieutenant Governor Brian Doobie in a campaign finance violation case that Doobie was involved in. So he's sort of well-known in political circles, both in Vermont and D.C. The firm in D.C. at one point, I believe, represented Karl Rove in the Valerie Flame leak case. So this hiring added a more political dimension to this situation.
So how did this come about? How did Mr. Tunzing come to represent Mr. Dodge? It's hard to believe that Mr. Dodge reached out to Mr. Tunzing. Do we know how this got connected?
No, and of course everybody asked that, and Mr. Tunzing is not saying who contacted whom or who is paying him. Jack Lindley of the Vermont Republican Party did tell the Vermont Press Bureau that he had had a conversation prior to the disclosure that Brady Tunzing was hired with Mr. Tunzing. So maybe, you know, that leads to speculation that perhaps there was some setup there, but we really don't know because what Brady Tunzing says is, hey, would you want, if I was representing you, would you want me to say how I was getting paid and how it all came together? He said, that's not what I do as a lawyer. I don't discuss those things.
So Mr. Dodge and his family say they want the land back. The governor says he's willing to void the contract and set up a payment plan for the money that he's given to Mr. Dodge. And you talked to the governor yesterday about this, and this is what he told you. Well,
this is what I know. I am very happy that Jerry has retained a lawyer. He and his family have stated repeatedly that their goal is to get the house back and return the money that I paid to them. That's a great outcome for them. And that's the outcome they want. It's an outcome I'm very happy with, and I look forward to that resolution.
Governor Peter Shumlin talking to you yesterday, John. So it seems like a pretty straightforward case, or is it more complicated than that?
Well, it depends on how long this takes to get resolved and what else could come out. The fact that there's a lawyer with Republican ties to both the state and national party people involved now adds another dimension. If it comes out that there's more of a direct line between the Republicans and the hiring of Brady Tunzing, then maybe sentiment politically shifts to the governor's favor. But that, you know, from Mr. Dodge's perspective, who wants his and his family's perspective, who wants his land back quickly, this, you know, they're both. Peter Shumlin is represented by Jerry Diamond, and so we've got two lawyers here who are very good, and presumably they could cut a deal pretty quickly.
So, John, last week, two Republican House members called for an independent investigation into this whole event. And as you mentioned, Governor Shumlin's lawyer in this case, former Attorney General Jerry Diamond, said such an investigation wasn't necessary because there's already a process in place where individuals can lodge complaints with the Department of Disabilities if they think, quote, an adult at risk has been taken advantage of. Here's Jerry Diamond.
There's a long process. It is an investigation that's done. I would assume that the Attorney General's office provides legal counsel through its assistant AGs to the department during the course of an investigation like that.
That's former Attorney General Jerry Diamond, who is Governor Shumlin's lawyer in this case. So, John, we just learned this type of investigation is indeed underway. So tell us about that.
Yes, Attorney General Bill Sorrell has confirmed that at least six Vermonters have asked for a review of this transaction, and they're asking whether the governor took advantage of a vulnerable adult. And there's a legal definition for that kind of person where you have to be you would be impaired due to brain damage or infirmities or physical or developmental disability. So the question is, did that happen? And that's what's being investigated. Now, that's being done by the Department of Disabilities and Aging and Independent Living. An assistant attorney general in that office will take these complaints. That complaint process is confidential, and we'll see where that goes.
And supposedly it's going to take a while for that to really unfold. We're not going to find out the outcome of this in the next week or two.
No, I doubt it.
And, you know, Mr. Dodge had been in and out of the correctional system. Might there have been some sort of evaluation of him while he was incarcerated?
Yeah, the correction system is supposed to evaluate people to see if they are functionally impaired. And I've looked into that question. It's quite a process to, in terms of privacy and medical laws, to find out if indeed that has taken place. So there could be an evaluation on the record, both by the state and by a mental health provider, that would give us an indication of his mental capacity.
You know, I'm wondering, John, do you have a sense if this is kind of a summertime story that's going to blow over in a couple of weeks and just become a footnote on Shumlin's political career? Or is there the potential here of this developing into something much larger?
Well, it really depends on how it unfolds, but elections are in part personality contests, right? And in one part of the governor's personality that people may have a problem with is that some people think he may be a little too smooth by half. And if this reinforces that image, it becomes an issue for him in a reelection campaign. And again, if the issue is kept alive, if there's more disclosures, if there's more that comes out. And we should say that Peter Shumlin says Mr. Dodge knew exactly what he was doing, that the deal was fair for both sides, and that he paid off he paid off the back taxes and set up a way, fixed up the house, paid to fix up the house so Mr. Dodge could live there. There are other aspects to this story that we really haven't fully discussed, but that go to Shumlin's defense.
VPR's John Dillon, many thanks for this update.
You're welcome, Bob.
That's our program for today. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sengary, and Sage Van Wing. We have production assistance from Annie Pruitt and Tim Johnson. Neil Charnoff directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.